once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Oh, boy, crazy, thank you. Oh, I'm tired. I had the worst
insomnia. Now you know how I feel every single day of my life.
Yours is self-inflicted because you're like, hey, I got like an hour to kill. Let's jam another podcast in. I think I know why. You know, you ever start watching a TV program and you get so wrapped up in it, you just spend the rest of the night thinking about it. So it's like I'll talk about it when we get to freaking and geeking, but we watch this program and then I fell asleep and I woke up and my brain was like, okay, we're wide awake and going to think about this for the next 4 hours. And so I spent the extra hour we got with daylight savings times up with insomnia. So I have an extra hour of insomnia. Isn't that great? I said, channeling Lewis Black.
Well, the cool thing about it is you had an hour extra time to watch TV.
I did and I didn't, but either way, we finished. And it did work out because I discover my math skills are at the optimum because we're on episode 7 and I'm thinking, oh, we only got 3 left because there's only 10. No, you have 4 left because you haven't watched episode 7 yet. 7, 8, 9, 10. 4 episodes, doofus. But it was a good mistake.
I was told there would be no math.
I did it for you.
Oh, okay, good. It's November!
Just like it was last year at this time.
November always hits with crazy. They waited on training us for open enrollment until the very last minute. And one of our clients, who I can't give the name to, but they deliver a lot of packages, they severely underestimated how many of their employees would be calling in. Severely underestimated. They asked if we could help out on that client, and I said sure. So they sent me the training, and I looked through the training, and it's okay. Here's what I'll be doing. All right, I've done the training. They flipped the switch. 1,200 calls waiting in the queue.
Hello. How many people? Waiting time is approximately 4 days, 3 hours, and 57 minutes.
2 hours and 30 minutes.
Wow.
Because they show us how long this person's been waiting. The next person in the queue has been waiting for 2 hours and 30 minutes. So, not even open enrollment yet. They've given me all these reports because now I remember I got that promotion without a raise. So I'm supposed to be doing all these reports. First time I've done them, so I'm going through very carefully so that I learn what I'm doing. Nope, here you go. So happy November. I did make it to Half Price Candy Day, though.
I did not, mainly because I need to cut back on what I'm eating. Like, for example, right here, I do have a box of Twix Unwrapped Bites, which I will be ceremoniously eating throughout the show. Because we know nothing gets our listeners enraged more than one of us eating on the show. Which is ironic, because I said I opened it up by saying I need to eat less sugar.
Ah. No, I went to the Target the day after Halloween. And no, those shelves were empty. They had next
to Target don't mess around. They were half pricing the day before Halloween.
Oh, I did not know that.
70% off the day of Halloween. Because they got Christmas stuff to move in.
Oh, yeah. They had already rearranged everything. And it's Christmas at Target. So the next day, I go to the Walgreens. And Walgreens is my happy place the day after a holiday. Because, they had 2 whole rows of Halloween stuff. At 50% off or 70% off, depending on. Peeps were 70% off. I literally cannot remember the last time I bought Peeps at their regular price. But I am set for the year Although I still have to make it out to the candy store because you keep sending me all these candy canes that I have to own.
Oh, and I'll take the trip with you if you can. We talked about it off thing. If it's possible, we'll try, because that might be my last hurrah before Hip Watch 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Well, we could, you know, if you want, because we do run around on Black Friday, we could end our Black Friday out at the candy store.
That would be cool. I mean, I don't know if Butch is going to join us or not, but it's always a good recording time. Speaking of which, have you got people lined up for the podcasts while I'm gone?
I have a few.
Oh, fun.
I've also we've also got some of the stuff we did over the summer while we were in cars.
Yeah.
So we are all set. I have someone for the Festivus episode, which is, to me, the most important episode of the year. Other people may think, oh, it's the anniversary episode, or it's this, or it's that. Nope, Festivus. For the airing of grievances. And I got a lot of problems with you people. And on Festivus, you're going to hear about it. So what have you been doing for the last week while I was answering phone calls and being at the group home way too damn much?
Work.
Oh.
Did a little overtime, like I think I blabbed about last podcast or two podcasts ago, because I actually listened to our travel podcast.
How was it?
It was good, although you could tell when we were lost how the witticisms went down to a minimum, because it was like, oh, where are we now? You always get the car background noise.
And of course, I could do that car background noise whenever you talk.
No, it's usually when it stops, because then you hear like when I take a corner. And of course, what was interesting is it started after the first traffic mishap, where a big ass truck that was probably about four car lengths ahead of us suddenly bolted into the left lane. And that was the first tirade of falling still for people driving through. But you did catch one of them, so that was cool. And ironically, we have a retraction to make. We will do that later in Freaking and Geeking.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, I haven't got my previews yet.
I got mine on Friday. I got this week's comics. You know, this week, the 3 weeks ago, still haven't got them.
Ugh. Have they even given you credit for them? I mean, what the heck is going on here? That's a lot of cash.
I'm going to be emailing again saying, hello, am I getting these comics, please? Because there was some cool stuff in there. There was all the Halloween special issues. There was some True Believer stuff. There was a couple of omnibuses. And there was a book that I was really looking forward to. You know how a new cartoonist took over Nancy and it has become very surreal?
No, I haven't, because I don't read a lot.
Yeah, a new cartoonist took over Nancy and made it very, very surreal and very strange. Almost like Zippy the Pinhead.
I was going to say, we've got Zippy already. I don't know what else we need.
Imagine Zippy with cleaner art and less words. And a little more modern.
And no Mr. Toad?
No Mr. Toad. Sorry.
Sorry, that's not worth reading.
Or who's Zippy's friend?
There's a lot of friends in the strip that aren't in the actual comic.
Who's the artist stand-in? The artist stand-in. What's his name?
I don't know.
Griffey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no Griffey.
No Griffey?
No. But they've put out a collection of the first year of those Strange Nancy strips. And I was really looking forward to that, because the local paper, the Minneapolis paper, no longer carries Nancy.
You can go to like gocomics.com and catch all those strips.
Oh, like I remember that.
You remember cheap discount graphic novels and how to whore your omnibuses.com, and here's how you can spend all your money on half price criterion collection.com. I mean, you remember all that stuff. But oh, remember
Nancy strip?
Yeah. Well, you can actually, for like, $10 a month, or you can have them email all your favorite comic strips that you want. in an email and just have like your own personal comic page and just go right down it. When I was on the road, I used to do that all the time. And then eventually when it expired, I just would go to the actual website where they had like, I don't know, hundreds of comic strips ready to go. And then I would just, you know, click on Classic Little Abner, Classic Peanuts, Classic Luann, Modern Luann, for better or for worse or later, whatever, you know. So it was cool. But then, Snuffy like Smith, you said, eventually you forget. Barney Google and Snuffy Smith.
And I don't think Barney Google has shown in that strip for like 10 years.
Decades, yeah, I do remember him showing once, and it was like, hey, I know him. He was down on his luck.
Wasn't he always?
Pretty much.
So, you know what I did when I wasn't at work or at work?
Well, if I did, we wouldn't have to talk about it.
I was reading funny books.
And I have been reading them off and on a lot. So, is it going to happen? Is this what I think is going to happen?
You know, why don't we review some funny books?
It's the new comic review coming right at you. It's the new comic review coming right at you.
I never liked that show.
It was scary, but it was about the only thing to watch that early in the morning.
I did like Zoom, though.
I didn't catch a lot of Zoom.
I wanted to be a writer for Zoom. I sent in jokes all the time. I got very nice postcards back, but I don't know. I don't think they ever used anything I sent in. Although my mother says that I sent in jokes to Boys Life, and I got printed in there a couple of times.
Did you get your copy of the Scout Handbook or the guide?
Yes.
Send those out. I know. I sent in. I always wanted. I had the which one had all like what you needed to do for getting the various ranks in that. And then the handbook was actually more interesting because that was almost like a Boy Scout survival guide, you know, all the different things you could do. I mean, obviously not, you know, killing a wild boar with your bare hands and a toothbrush, but I never did get anything published. Very disappointing.
You know what was bad about that survival handbook thing, you know, with here's what to do to start a fire, here's what to do. As I read that, I went, I don't know any of these things. I should not be in the woods.
Corey, stay out of the woods.
Pretty much. When I would read through it, it's like, oh, there's no way I could do that. I remember one time I tried with the flint and the thing to try to start a fire. And after about 10 minutes, I went, well, if I were stuck in the woods, I would freeze to death and die.
I actually got the Society of Singed Eyebrows, which means I had to start a fire three different ways, not using a match.
Mm.
No guarantee it would work, you know, in a crisis situation, but it could.
Let's see. Three ways to start a fire without a match. Leave a bunch of oily rags in the garage on a really hot day.
Put some, what do they call that stuff that you varnish? In a tin can and seal it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it'll just heat up and blow up.
Turn on the gas stove.
Run across a field with during a thunderstorm with some type of metallic object.
A lighter.
Oh, Girl Scout water. That's what we use. Or better known as lighter fluid.
See, a lighter isn't a match, therefore. But no, I read me some funny books. Matter of fact, the first one I read was supposedly funny.
Go for it. I usually start off. We'll let you start off this time.
The final issue of All New Material of Mad, number 10, showed up in my box. And I, of course, wanted to read it. The first thing I will notice is that they still had a subscription ad. And they put a thing in there saying that, no, this is not the last issue of Mad. They did, however, in the letters page say that future issues of Mad would be mostly reprint, but they would have a few things from Millennials because they can't get rid of them. Mad is exactly what it has been for a while. The most of the older cartoonists that you know have left. They still have a Sergio section. Peter Cooper does Spy versus Spy. They have new people doing the lighter side, but it's not as square and droll as when Dave Berg did it. Tom Richmond still does the parodies. And they have a lot of humor aimed at kids. It was the Halloween issue, so there was some, you know, some gross stuff. But as I read it, it's very clear that, you know, this is a magazine aimed at kids 12, 13, 14, 15. They did a parody of The Handmaid's Tale. And as I'm reading it, and, you know, it's clever. I don't think I ever laughed, but I would go, oh, that's a good joke. Oh, that's clever. But then I think, much like when I was a kid and they do parodies of The Godfather or Papillon, it's like kids aren't watching these movies. I understand why Mad is going away. And as I, you know, I have picked it up now and then. This is not an issue edited by Bill Morrison, which is a shame because the Morrison edited issues were, I would say, two steps up in quality and humor. And this was back down to what it has been for a while. It's a humor magazine aimed at kids. It's not for me. The level of cartooning and quality is good. My biggest concern with Mad Ending is that Sergio has been working on it forever, and he is a true national treasure, much like us. And I wish that there was something out there where we could get Sergio stuff every month. I know in the past he had a series all of his own. Gru comes out incredibly infrequently. So on the scale that we use of buy, which is, hey, you need to go out and buy it. Borrow, yeah, it's okay. You can borrow it, but it's not worth paying money for. Or ignore, this is crap. Don't read it. If you are a 12-year-old boy, this is a buy. For everybody else, it's kind of an ignore. Joe?
The first one out I read was a four-issue miniseries from Dark Horse Comics called Calamity Jane. Let's see. Magdalene Visaggio wrote it. Corin Howell drew it. And I know a lot of the books I reviewed here had redheads as protagonists. You've been a kind of a rotten influence on me, Corey. Anyways,
I'm not into redheads anymore. It's tremendous.
Yeah, brunettes. So I just say. Anyways.
Although there was one I just friended on Facebook who.
Whatever color is Christina Hendricks' hair is that month, that's your fave. Calamity Kate is Kate Strand, who is a monster hunter. They call her Calamity because she has a lot of bad luck wherever she goes. And basically she's shows up in town, fights a few monsters, meets a, has trouble with friends, has trouble with love, has trouble with rival, and eventually leaves town. And it's one of those books where I was reading and I enjoyed the heck out of it. And after reading it, I'm kind of like, that's it? I want more. And again, I have no idea how well this sold. I'm assuming this is a creator-owned property. Let me just take a look here. Published by Dark Horse, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's owned by the creator. So she may show up somewhere else. I enjoyed it. It was a good read, good artwork. What I like in my artwork is that I don't have to guess who the characters are as I go from page to page. I believe this is available in a graphic novel. And again, I tried to do mine spoiler free, so I don't want to give away too much because hopefully you're interested. First of all, by just listening to us, thank you. And second, hopefully you find it interesting enough to actually go seek this out because this has been out for a while. I waited till I had all four issues together. And I do know there's a dichotomy in between what I recommend in reviews and what I recommend in previews. So I'm kind of consistent that way. So either way, this is your second chance. Don't blow it. Calamity Clayton through Dark Horse. Go check it out. Definitely worth the read. And I bought it. So it's not a big, well, how did you say it?
Buy, borrow, ignore.
Yep. No, I just, I don't buy it. What's up for you?
The next one is a single comic I ordered with my DCB service. It's rare that I order a single comic because I've pretty much become a trade guy, but I could not turn down Crazy Number One.
I think I've got it coming in my box, but let's hear it.
Crazy Number One. Crazy was a, well, first it was a comic back in the 50s under Atlas. And then they did a reprint comic of it in the early 70s. But then in the when Marvel did their black and white magazines, they started Crazy as a magazine to pretty much go up against Mad because Cracked was doing well. Mad was, as we've talked about in the past, selling over 2 million copies a month. Even Sick was selling, which is weird because I don't think I ever saw an issue of Sick anywhere, but that was edited by, let's see, it was printed by Carlton and it was edited by Joe Simon. But Crazy was Marvel's Mad version. The early issues, they actually tried pretty hard not to be Mad. The first 14 issues, they were trying their own thing, but eventually they, nope, we're just going to do a Mad knockoff. And it lasted 94 issues. One of the longest running Marvel black and white magazines. I think the only one that ran longer was Savage Sword of Conan. So for the 80th anniversary, they did a one issue of Crazy. This was not like Marvel's humor magazine, What the, which was a series of short humor stories. This was more like What If number 34, where it's short one-page gags. It was a mix of different art styles. Don Simpson finally got his dream to draw Spider-Man. Don Simpson, best known for Megaton Man, infamous for Wendy Whitebread, Undercover Slut. This was fun if you're a Marvel fan. There were a lot of inside jokes. There was a lot of one-shot gags. There was just a lot going on in this book. I wish Marvel kept doing stuff like this. I think the problem with What The was they were putting it out every month. Back when it was bi-monthly or quarterly, it was a lot of fun. But every month, it's like, okay, you can't keep up this pace. Crazy was just a lot of fun. It reminds me of the humor books they put out after every one of the crossovers they did. So if you're a Marvel fan, this is definitely a buy. A lot of short stories, a lot of good gags, a lot of inside gags, where if you've been reading Marvel for a long time, you'll get the jokes. It was just a very fun comic, and it reminded me back when I started reading Marvel, how every so often they would just have goofy stuff because they wanted to have fun. Like the Defenders, when they had their recruitment drive that they didn't ask for. Or Fantastic Four 176, where the Impossible Man showed up at Marvel offices. This was back to that Marvel sense of fun. And if you're a Marvel fan, this is a definite buy. If you're not, I would say it's even a borrow, because there are enough good gags in here that it was worth my while. They will be doing a trade paperback of Crazy. I think it comes out in either December or January, which will have a lot of the better stuff from the magazine and this entire issue in it. So Crazy gets a big buy from me. Joe?
I did it. I got all 9 issues of Heroes in Crisis lined up. If you remember way back when? And I suppose I'll give you a Joe prize if you know what episode it was when I read issue 1 and 2, or maybe just 1, and said, you know, maybe if I read them all at once, it'll be more interesting. It was, and it wasn't. I left this with a very, very bad taste in my mouth because, and I guess I'm going to say spoiler warning.
We're doing reviews, they're all going to be spoiled.
Well, I try not to spoil because I'm trying to entice you into buying it. But in this one, I don't know. I guess I sat down thinking, okay, you got Heroes. They've got, I get the initials wrong. PSTs?
Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD.
Which, again, I'll buy the premise, you know, but, you know, I always thought that was the point of being a hero, is you deal with it. And there was a murder, and it was a mystery, and then when they revealed who did it and why he did it and how he did it, sorry, I'm going to have to mopey this one out of existence, because I don't buy it. Sorry, King. It was beautifully drawn. It was, you had me for a while, but when you finally got to the reveal, it seemed like, oh, well, the initial deaths were gratuitous. You didn't really handle the mental crisis very well. Corey, you can attest. How was it as a mystery?
As a mystery, I thought it was very well done. As someone who's worked in the mental health field, he hit the stuff about post-traumatic stress disorder head on. It was well researched in that regard. I have not read it all at once. I did read it as it came out. I enjoyed it, but like most people, when it got to whodunit, it was a shock.
It was a lot like when we found out Hal Jordan went nuts and destroyed everybody, Green Lantern Corps.
It was very shocking. It was okay. I see where all the pieces fit. Okay. It's one of those where, you know, when you watch certain movies, you get to the end and you want to go back. Well, The Good Place. Remember when you got to the shock at the end of season one? Did you go back to watch and see where they set it all up? Because I did. Yeah. So I'm still waiting to do that with Heroes in Crisis.
Yeah, I just didn't like it. I mean, and I rarely review things that I didn't like. And I didn't buy it. I've seen a lot of blowback. And again, you know more about mental crises than I do, because you trained in it. But boy, there's a lot of blowback online from it, saying you guys really had a chance to deal with this and you didn't. And you made it more of a murder mystery, and then you kind of pulled the murder guy out of left field. And consequently, for me, I would either ignore it or at very worst borrow it. But because I bought it, DC, you owe me $35.91, which again is one of the problems with comics these days, is that the only way to do it is, unless you wait and get it from the library, you know, you got to plunk your money down ahead of time, because there's a couple coming up that I'll review that are already sold out, and you're either going to have to wait for hope their second, third prints, or just wait for the graphic novel. And by then, who knows, like with me with Star Wars, the next Star Wars movie, maybe somebody will give away the ending, and then you're kind of like, well, what's the point of reading it? Like you said, half the fun, it might be more fun if I go back and reread and see how everything falls together. So again, read it as a chunk, maybe not as individual issues. I was left unsatisfied, and I didn't like it. So again, ignore it or borrow it. What's up next for you?
Up next for me is the first issue of a comic, one that I've actually been looking forward to. It's Archie 55. Mark White and Brian Augustin did Archie 1941 with Peter Krause. Basically, what if the Archie gang graduated high school in 1941? This one is What If Archie and the Gang Graduated High School in 1955. It's drawn by Tom Grummett. This is the start of rock and roll. And when we think Archie, I don't know about you, Joe, but even as a kid, when I read Archie comics, to me, they felt like they were set in the 50s. You know, they may have had bell-bottom pants and everything, but it was just very much that whole kind of, you know, oh, she's my gal and we're going steady sort of thing. So this actually takes it and places it in the 50s. And again, treats the characters very seriously. Not a lot of humor in this. So if you're picking it up thinking it's your standard Archie sitcom, I would refer you to Archie 1941, where they're dealing with the effects of World War II. This deals with the effect of segregation. And segregation involved in music, which is something that, it's one of those things I've always kind of known about, But it wasn't till the last few years that I really started to hear and understand the whole, you know, because Joe, you probably even heard, oh, parents were against rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now I understand that it's because it was thought of as Negro music. And it wasn't a, these kids, darn these kids and their music. It's more, we don't want black people music being played on white people radio. And this story dives right into that. And I really, really like this first issue. Tom Grummett is one of those artists who, back when he was doing superhero books, I picked him up every time. And I don't understand why his art isn't on a major book at Marvel and DC, because it's just so damn good. Wade and Augustine they know the Archie setup. They know the characters. And even when Wade did his run on Archie, kind of that complete revamp, I thought he was brilliant on it. I wish he would have stayed on forever. But if he and Augustine are going to do these stories, I'm perfectly happy. This is a definite buy. And much like with Archie 41, I will be buying the trade paperback when it's done. Joe?
I moved to Los Angeles to work in animation. No, not me. Natalie Noragat did a graphic novel through Boom Box, a.k.a. Boom Studios. And basically, it's her story when she left her life in Portland to move to Los Angeles and pursue a career in animation. And she realized that despite her research, nothing truly prepared her for the wild world that awaited her in the studios of Southern California. It's autobiographical. It's a how-to graphic novel. It explores the highest highs and the lowest lows of pursuing a dream in animation with a dose of humor and advice not found anywhere else, where she actually does like what you got to know interviews with other animation professionals like Diana Ha, who did She-Ra, Angie Wang, who is in Steven's Universe, Kelly Perdue did Infinity Train, and much more. I love books like this because, A, I will probably never move to Los Angeles. I will never work in animation, although I could. And when you read the book, you kind of can discover why. And I thought it was just kind of interesting, very compelling about how she got her job, how she got the interviews, what it was like when she moved to L.A., what she expected, how she found a place to live in one of the most competitive areas in the country. And then at the end, she talks to other anime artists who have alternative point of views. And the book's not terribly expensive. It's only a $10 graphic novel, which means you probably get it for less now. And I absolutely adore these types of books. And to me, this was a lot of fun. I bought it. I recommend you buy it. And even if you're just interested, I don't know how common books like this are, if you could find it at a local library, but really this should be in a library. It should actually be in schools. Definitely if you're in a place like MCAD, Minnesota Computer Arts and Design, just to give you some insight of what it's like, whether you're interested in working in animation or if you're just, I'm never going to do it. Let's see what it's like. I mean, there's a reason why Ron Jeremy's book is sitting up there on the shelf. I'm never going to be a porn actor. There is that old man stuff. Lemon Party. Don't Google it. So I recommend this. That's for you, Dan. I do recommend this one. I did buy it, and you should go buy it too. Tell them Crazy sent you.
One of the things about all of these, here's how to draw comics. Here's how to write comics. Here's how to do this. Here's how to do that. They never have. Here's how to break in. I remember Dave Sim did a comic in the early 90s of how to self-publish. And in a lot of ways, that set off the self-publishing boom of the early 90s. Now, a lot of the people who did it eventually went to publishers because the market got really weird. Jeff Smith from Bone. He was one of the guys who, Dave Sim is showing the way for self-publishing. Rick Veitch, Colleen Duran, All these people took the information in that and learned how to self-publish. I think we need more books that are less about here's how to draw a hand and more books about here's how to get a job.
Well, and this one actually goes a little further because she talks about stress and moving, yeah. Not only finding animation studios, what to do, you know, because what surprised her, and again, giving away a little bit more than I like to in my reviews, but, you know, she's in L.A. You know, what are some of the best things about being in L.A.? Well, the thing is there wasn't a lot of afterlife after everybody finished a day in the studio. Everybody went home to their family, and consequently, she'd spend a lot of time alone in her apartment. Like, what just happened? Where is everybody? These are things that, I don't know, you know, Corey, you could probably do a good story. I mean, you moved from Illinois to come all the way up to Minneapolis. I've always been in the Twin Cities. You know, the closest I've traveled is when I was back in the early podcasting, well, this year podcast, when I was traveling around with TSA. But even then, that was just a temporary thing. I wasn't permanently moved there. So, yeah, you're right. There needs to be more of that. And what's nice on this one is you may be thinking, you may read something and they're going, I want to be in animation, but maybe I don't want to move to L.A.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. You do want to move to L.A. if you're in animation, but that's a different subject. So.
Right. It's like the best advice I ever got about writing for comics. You know what it was?
Right.
No. Fabian Neosaja said, we really don't look at writers unless they're in the office.
And I wonder if that's true nowadays.
I still think a lot of people break in by being interns and assistant editors. But in the late 80s, he said, look, if you want a job writing, it's easy. You just have to move to New York, get a job as a proofreader or an assistant editor or a copy person or, you know, something like that. So that when, oh my God, we need a story tomorrow, you can jump in and write it. Scott Lodell was doing stand-up comedy, but every day he walked by Marvel offices, so he just would drop off a plot every day, every single day. And it was usually he learned that they were looking for stuff for copyright retention. So he would write an 8-issue plot for Marvel Comics Presents about an obscure character. Here's a Brother Voodoo story. Here's a Shamrock story. Here's an Arabian Night story. You know, boom, boom, boom. And the reason he got the X-Men wasn't because his stuff was so great. It's because they knew he would turn stuff in on time. So if the book gives a lot of informational detail like that, you know, when you move to LA, here are the places to go. Here's what you should be expecting. Here's stuff to have in your portfolio. There's a guy on Facebook, David Campiti, who was the publisher of Innovation, and now he runs Glassheart Graphics, which is basically he's an agent for tons of artists. Pretty much all the artists who work at Zenoscope. Mike Diodato started with him. There are a lot of people, and both comic companies and non-comic companies will come to him. We need an artist who can do this. We need an artist who can do that. And if you're working with him, he will send out, all right, I've got this job available. Here's what's needed. And he says half the time with the new artists, they're either late or they don't turn in what's asked for or they send it in the wrong format, et cetera, et cetera. And if you make, you know, if you're friends with him on Facebook, he'll explain getting into comics is easy if you understand how to follow instructions and your work is good. You could be the best artist in the world, but if you can't follow instructions, you're not going to get a job. You could be kind of mediocre, but if you follow instructions and are timely, you could get jobs. So I'm going to look up this book. I'm excited about it really now. The next one I read was the first in a new series of books that DC is doing. And I thought it was something that they were going to be doing a lot of. But after reading it, I think it's part of the upcoming crisis. And that is Tales of the Dark Multiverse, Death of Superman. So, Joe, you remember the Death of Superman, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the first week I had my comic shop.
So this is pretty much a what if. And it's more like the 70s what if, where every story had a terrible, sad ending. They pretty much set you up at the beginning that this is part of the dark multiverse. When things go horribly wrong with the Earth, it ends up in the dark multiverse. And we even have a new character who introduces it to us, Tempest Fugitate, who shows up in another book I'll be reviewing. And he basically says, he explains what the dark multiverse is, why it exists, and then he narrates the story of after the death of Superman, Lois Lane decides to get to take his place, and things go horribly, horribly wrong. I did not expect to like this book because I don't like stories where we're going to tell this story except everything goes bad. You know, how many times in What If did it? And then the universe died. The end.
Yeah, or the hero died. That's why it was better the way it was, because they'd be dead in this one. Which, you know, in reality wasn't going to happen, because they're not going to just kill off Superman and let him be dead, or Wolverine, or whoever, because they make money. But whatever, you know, it's.
Yeah,
I was more interested if you made it like, okay, here's a what if that happened, but we're going to make sure that the characters keep being published somehow.
Like Spider-Girl.
Yeah.
Actually, my favorite what if was what if Elektra would have lived, where Matt Murdock and Elektra say, fuck this, and just take off and go live on an island somewhere. But this does it in such a way that it actually presents moral choices for characters, and it shows the flaws in those characters. It was much more thoughtful than I expected. It was much better done than I expected. And because it's the way it's narrated, I really think this is one of the first seeds they're planting for the next crisis. So on a buy, borrow, ignore, this one's a buy. And that actually surprises me. So when they do collect all of these, if the others are just as good, I will probably pick up that trade paperback. Joe?
Oh, I'm going to eat a little crow right here, if you don't mind.
Please be nice to the crows. The crows are my friends.
Well, they, you know, they'd be part of a caucus, I guess. But does Strode know? What do you call a bunch of crows?
A murder.
Of course. But no, this was not murderous. I remember when this first came out, and I'm talking, of course, Planet of the Apes, Green Lantern, which is a combination crossover, I believe, Boom and DC and 20th Century Fox. I got to put their logo on there. And now, I suppose now Disney, because they own a piece of that pie, too. And I thought, no, because I thought this can't be any good, because the Green Lanterns way overpower anything on Planet of the Apes. Then I read Star Trek, the original Planet of the Apes crossover. And it was kind of like, well, the Klingons found their way into an alternate reality where the Planet of the Apes hung out. So I picked this up, and I believe I picked this up at one of our 70% off excursions to one of our local comic stores. And I got around to reading it, and I'm reading it. And then one panel made this work for me. And I'm just going to read it. This particular reality where, well, it's Green Lantern. It could take place on our world, our DC world. However, the Earth that the Planet of the Apes on is a, quote, version of Earth locked in a time loop, isolating it from the rest of hypertime. Okay, you got me. That's how it works. And so I just sat down and read it. Robbie Thompson wrote it. and Justin Jordan with artist Barnaby Begenda, I guess, from Omega Man. This was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm a geek for Planet of the Apes. I mean, I've reviewed different books occasionally as they come up, and I've loved a lot of them. And so I gave this one a shot, and why not at 70% off? And I enjoyed it. It works. The premise works. It's once you explained how Planet of the Apes worked, the rest of it just fell into place beautifully, and I enjoyed myself quite a bit. So I would definitely say, as this came out quite a while ago, let me take a look.
In 1930.
Pretty close. 2017. So the book's probably out of print because it was a crossover book, and a lot of these have a limited shelf life by whatever the contract is. And I'm pretty sure with Planet of the Apes now being all owned by Disney, because that was part of the Fox deal, that whatever rights they had to originally publish this have probably gone away, especially in DC side. So if you can, you should be able to find copies of this, because I mean, it was one of those books that came out with 300 different variant covers.
It is still available on Amazon.
Oh, good. Because I was going to say the book, and there's a hardcover book too. They're not collector items yet. But yeah, this is definitely, if you're interested in the concept, borrow it. If you're like me and you love either Green Lantern or Planet of the Apes, definitely buy it. So again, when it first came out, I poo-pooed it. I didn't buy it. And then that's one of the reasons I love it when we go to shops and just pick up tons of cheap stuff, because you get a chance to try different things, and then we can talk about it and brag about it here on this year podcast. Cool.
I read the first issue of a new series of books, and that is the Joe Hill books.
Oh, that's the ones that we've been talking about, but you must have got the first one?
Yes, I picked up the first one. Joe Hill is Stephen King's son. Although he went by Joe Hill so he could make his own name. And then he got out that he was Stephen King's son, and they're writing together and blah, 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 blah.
You had me at Joe.
But Basket of Heads was the first book that came out. And to be honest, when they talked about it, I was not interested. Because I'm not really into gore. I'm not into... it sounded much different than it is. I picked up the first issue, and damn if it doesn't read like a Stephen King novel. There are two things about this book that are very different from your regular comic. First, this is much slower paced than your regular comic. It feels more like a novel than it does a comic, in that it's taking a while to set everything up. We are in a town in Maine. What a shock. Stephen King's son writes about Maine. And the lead character is a college-age kid who's going to college for law enforcement. And he has spent the summer working for the local police force in a very sleepy town, where he spends most of his time just writing tickets. But there's an incident where four people escape in a prison transport, and things move forward from there. They have laid the seeds for a lot of stuff. Joe Hill, because he's a novelist, is really good about, I'm going to take time and introduce each character. The characters are not stereotypes. They're interesting. They're unique. They feel like people you would know in a small town. Again, I was expecting this to be, a lot of gore. But it's not. It really starts out kind of slowly and is building to things. And while this first issue doesn't feel like horror, it does feel like small town suspense. So if you are a Stephen King fan, if you like that style of story, or I would say if you like not Ray Bradbury's prose, but the fact that most of his stories kind of had that same small town feel, You would really like Basket of Heads, Basket Full of Heads. Again, this is one where I will wait till it's in a trade to read the whole thing, but I was very impressed by this first issue. Also, there is a backup in the back that does feel like what I thought it would be. It's a very gory story set in the 1800s, and it's going to have like three to five pages in each of the Hill books. I don't know if I will bother with that because I was not impressed with the backup. But for the regular comic, I would give this a buy. Joe?
How many books have we done?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
So this is it?
I guess.
You know, I got a lot here to record. Tell you what, Corey, put 2 minutes on the clock. I'm going to see how many of these I can get through in 2 minutes.
All right. Hold on a second. When I work at the group home, they are always, always, always watching the Game Show Network. So here we go. Let's see. Stopwatch. Timer. 2 minutes. Tell me when you're ready.
I am ready.
And begin.
All right. These are a bunch of number ones from Boom Studios. Something is killing the children. Oh, man, creepy, fun, amazing. Good luck finding that first issue. It's expensive. From Lions Press. No, Forge, I'm sorry. 7 days. I've talked about this one before. Oh, man, the last thing, as soon as they figure out what's going on, they're like, oh, we're not without mercy. You have 7 days to the end of the world, and that was day one. Pick it up. From Fantico, Infinite Punishment, Shadows of War. A little sparse, harsh art, but hey, you know, you got demon chicks. It's good. Worth definitely picking up. Let's see. From Action Lab, Going to the Chapel, Love is the Ultimate Hostage Situation. Good art, good story, and what's a little love without a good shotgun wedding? Oh, what's love? How about Safe Sex from Image, number one? It is what you think it is. Oh, boy, they're controlling sex. And if you want to do safe, well, she's definitely not doing it. Dark Horse Comics, number one, Steeple. Another redhead, I believe. Thank you, Corey. Another murder mystery with different things going on. Definitely worth picking up. Four-issue series from Alterna Comics, Gods and Gear. Number one is out. Hey, it's only $1.50. What do you want? Ruby Falls from Burger Books, Dark Horse Studios, another redhead. Have you seen this girl missing? Kind of a good setup, good art, definitely worth picking up. Margie, Intergalactic Trash Collector, again from Fantago, 3-issue series, another redhead. Collecting trash is not as easy as you think when you're out in the intergalactic area. Pick it up. Hey, Pretty Violent from Jason Young, Derek Hunter, and Image. I read the first 2 issues. Not quite sure where I'm going with this one, but I'm going to stick around. Another 2-issue one from Burger Books, Everything. I raved about this one and previews, but I read the first 2, and I'm not sure what the hell's going on. Not sure if I'm going to stick around with this one, but I'll give it a shot. Vault Comics, The Mall, number one. Definitely want to pick it up because it's not your regular shopping mall. What can I say? Finally...
Time's up. Set it down and walk away.
All right. Not too bad. I only got 4 left, and we'll talk about those maybe next week.
Okay. You know who has a lot of time, Joe?
I don't know anybody who put an hour back and wasn't Insomniac.
These guys.
Our sponsors. Again. Oh, cool.
Promotional consideration is paid for by the following sponsors. Our first sponsor is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com has been with us since the beginning. They're the best web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a web host, and you do because, you know, Facebook, Google+, everything gets hacked. But if you set up your own web page, it'll never get hacked. Unless you kind of make some mistakes or pick an easy password like password. But still, you can have your own web page. If you use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year. When you're at the office, do you often run to the vending machine for snacks? Those things are terrible for you. Instead, have snacks delivered to you. So go to graze.com. Graze.com has healthy snacks that you can decide what kind of snacks you want, how often you want them, whether they get delivered to you, or if you choose them every time. I myself get the subscription box every 2 weeks so that I have healthy things to eat when I'm at work. You can get a free box by using the code CORYS3R5P. Matter of fact, use that code, your fifth and your first box are free. Again, that's CORYS3R5P. If you'd like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network shows, you can just send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And if you would like to get in on this podcast goodness and maybe see if you can review books faster than Joe, you can. Joe will be out for Hip Watch 2 Electric Boogaloo in December, and here's how you can be a host. As Joe preps for Hip Watch 2 Electric Boogaloo, I am looking for co-hosts through the month of December. Now, the other thing that we did last year that I really enjoyed, because December can be a very busy month, is we recorded most of our fill-in episodes in October and November. So, if you would like to be a co-host on Crazy Comics and Stories in the month of December, you can! Believe it or not, kids, I am letting other people co-host. If you have a topic, go ahead and let me know. If you have experience with other podcasts, go ahead and let me know. But you can be a co-host. How, you may ask, and you darn well should. You can email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject co-host. If you don't have an idea for a episode topic, that's okay. Joe usually doesn't have an idea anyway. I have tons of ideas. And if I know a little about you and what you like to collect, we can do a focused episode like I did with Dangerous Dan Moore when we talked about his favorite character, Thanos. Or when I co-hosted with Adam Vermillion and we talked about his favorite character, Daredevil. So go ahead and email me. I'm looking for co-hosts and I'd like you to be one of them. And don't think that I'll be taking any time off while Joe's taking time off, because I've got all these podcasts to do. The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about. Every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose Podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast. And he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. And if you think that I'm on all of these podcasts, you're wrong. Because Scrabbling Across the West is at scrabbling.solitairerose.com, where musician Dave Coffell and his wife Stephanie travel across America and then sitting down to play Scrabble and talk about the day. That's at Scrabbling Across the West, scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha. There, that was pretty quick. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, not where he takes an hour and a half in the bathroom.
Oh, and I could, man. I've been eating a lot of fiber.
It's Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Well, you know, I could sit here and I could talk about things I sold, or I could sit here and give you some wildly good eBay advice, but I thought I would let Corey ask me a question about the eBays. Corey, ask me a question about the eBays.
How is eBay actually doing with all of the changes they have put through within the last couple of years.
It's interesting because the biggest dilemma I think eBay has is that they tried to reinvent themselves. When's the last time you bid on an auction?
Actually, it was about 2 weeks ago, and I will talk about it later in this here podcast.
But when you decide you want something, are you willing to auction it, or do you just go out and buy it?
The item I found was a buy it now. But I don't mind an auction if I'm able to get a deal.
And that's, I think, a lot of what's happened. eBay kind of is moving away from their auction ideas. You can still do auctions and still have some fun. But it's still kind of the 300-pound gorilla in the room when it comes to comics. Toys, maybe not so much. The other thing, too, is to get on Amazon, you have to really jump through a lot of hoops. I've talked with some sellers, because I go to the local shows and stuff. And a lot of them say they would love to get on Amazon, but they're strict about what they sell, about getting people on. I was able to get on pretty easy, and maybe it's because I've been doing eBay for so long. Some of the other sites are a little easier. Like if you're doing home crafts, Etsy's a good place to do. Facebook Marketplace is starting to grow. I see more people advertising things there. But for eBay, comics are still kind of the place to go. If you're looking for a copy of, Star Reach production Quack number 6 from like 1977, where would you go? Amazon doesn't really sell individual issues of comics yet. You run to the eBays. Or maybe you want a run of the Fantastic Four number 1 variant covers, the volume 6, where you get the portrait of all the people. Maybe you want a Death 8-inch plush from 2000 DC Direct. Maybe you want a Walt Disney Showcase number 48, which had the Wonderful Adventures of Pinocchio. Came out in 1979. These, you can go to individual sites. You can go to Mile High Comics, or maybe you've got your own favorite place. My Comic Book is a good place or whatever. eBay still seems to be the place to go, especially for newer books and things like that. So for that market, it seems to be doing good. And there's a lot of people that, clows, diecasts, knickknacks, just fun, wonderful things. It's still a good place to haunt. The big gorilla in the room right now is Amazon for everybody. And I don't know if Amazon's ever going to move into individual comics or if the price point is just so small they don't care. But it's definitely, for me, it's worthwhile because, of course, I'm a bottom feeder, too, is anything I try to put the lowest price possible. And that's how I'm able to sell so much fun stuff. Like all the stuff I mentioned, forget about it. It's gone. But I just put a whole bunch of new stuff on, and I'll be putting more stuff on. I'll tell you, when I get to the HipWatch 2 Electric Boogaloo, I'll probably shut it down for a month because I got to retrain my body to do everything. And I do mean everything. And I got to tell you, when I recorded some stuff from the last time I had my hip, just to say, hey, I'm doing okay, I was surprised how bad it hurt to sit at my computer desk and try to record things quickly. So the eBays will definitely be going down, but until then, I'll be putting stuff up at a frantic pace. Today, I spent a lot of time dropping prices. I sent out offers. If you put something up and somebody's watching it, you can send them an offer. You don't know who it is, but you could say, hey, it's kind of like, okay, well, you're kind of watching this, Modern Master in Volume 14 with Frank Cho. I had it priced at $30, but I dropped it to $20.99 and sold it. What do you think of that, huh? Pretty nifty, huh? And he got a good deal. I got a sale. And you can do it, too. You got the advantage because you're a listener of this here podcast. You see something you're interested in, send me a quick note, either through the eBay system. Because if you send me a note, and you say to me, hey, you've got that Harlan Ellison, Steve Corbin signed edition of A Boy and His Dog. It's a little high price. Would you take this for it? If you send me a message through the eBay system, I can send you an offer back and say, why, yes, I will accept your offer, especially since you listen to this here show. Or I might say, you know what? I paid this for it. I just want 10% over because that'll cover it what eBay takes for me. So there's all sorts of things on there. Like I said, I'm listing all sorts of new stuff. And I just actually found a couple boxes of some stuff that I didn't realize I had.
Ooh.
I know. So check it out. Everything's going to be rocking, and I will probably actually do some real sales right before the week of December 8th, because that's the week I get my hip done, and I will probably shut everything down and let it sit for a while. So this is, as I like to say, come get some. Crazy, and by the way, K-R-A-Y-Z, in case you didn't know that, from the name of the show or my eBay or comics or store or whatever.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I go to Quinn McKay's Instagram page and drool over her pictures. Ooh, man.
Hey, now.
She's the new announcer on Ring of Honor, and she plays kind of a really nerdy girl character on Ring of Honor. And then I went to her Instagram page, and it's, oh, my. No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Holy, I'm going to get a hip replacement surgery in less than a month. Yeah, I've been talking about it almost all year, but damn it. I don't know if I'm ready for this shit. And of course, on top of all that, my printer went to hell. I don't know. Did you Wi-Fi your printer, or do you still have a connection?
I still use a cord because I tried setting up the Wi-Fi for the printer, and the screen on the printer is really tiny, and it's like, no, I have cords. I'm just going to connect it with a cord.
And see, since the Cray 3000 died, and I'm using the 4000, I do the interwebs thing. But, boy, something, I don't know what went wrong. I had my old printer because, first of all, it doesn't connect. You know, it says a printer's offline. No, it isn't. It's sitting here. Oftentimes, that just means I either have to log off, log on, turn off the printer, turn on the printer, or restart the computer. And it magically gets pulled out of the Etherweb and gets pushed onto my printer cartridge and comes out. And, but it just, I was doing some stuff. It just didn't work. And it wouldn't load the paper. And then, of course, it always does it after you load the, you know, $200 cartridges in. And it's like, oh, no, your cartridges aren't working. And I go, well, yes, they are. They're brand effing new. And they're not knockoff refills like you can buy off the eBays. They're actual new ones. And it's just every one program would have another program. And you do the YouTubes. And it's like, oh, here's how you solve this problem. Here's how you solve that problem. One after the other after the other. Well, I was in my – well, if you can pause and go back to last week's podcast where you see how – rational I was when traffic cut me off. Yes, that's about how rational I know I get when my computers don't work and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So I unplugged it. I didn't throw it out the window, mainly because I don't have money to buy a new window. But I just went to the Best Buys and bought the cheapest printer they had, which probably means as soon as I run out of ink, I'm probably going to have the most expensive cartridges ever. So, but I'm back and running. So that was kind of annoying as all hell. Another slight annoyance is with the post office. I all excited because I got this gift coming for my wife. And I'll tell you about it when I get it because she's in the other room and I don't want her to hear it. But the place I got it from was nice. I said, you know, I the computer hicked up when I tried to put in my computer codes because it wouldn't take my credit card. I'd use a different one. And I lost the discount code. We said, okay, no, we'll give you the 20% off. It was just nice. But the post office, apparently, you know, I got, you know, Wheelock Avenue East is my address. Wheelock Avenue South. Now, there is no Wheelock Avenue South in the zip code. However, I am the only Joe Ryder on Wheelock Avenue in this particular zip code. Not good enough for the post office. They turned around and sent my package back. And I'm like, really? I've had worse address flubs, and you've been able to find me. And now this one, whoever the brain dead fart at the post office decides, nope, he got that one letter off. Not south, east. Better send it back. you know, again, I don't know. Maybe it's got one of those dumb things on it. If not deliverable, please return. So maybe it's not the post office fault, but it is annoying as all hell because I paid like $200 for it, and now it's in limbo. I mean, I'm sure tomorrow I'll get an email from the guy saying, yeah, it's returned. We'll turn around and correct that. Because technically it's their fault anyways, because I sent them the correct address. And if you want to go get a double Joe prize, go back. Remember when I had some Fred Hembeck art coming my way and I screwed up and put my folks' address on it instead of my current address? An address I haven't lived there since 1990. And but they delivered it to my old folks' address. Unfortunately, the guy there was able to give it to me. So I'm a little freaked out on that. By the way, at that last podcast, I remember where Corey and I talked about going to Epic Comics and how cool it was and how everything was neat. Don't bother. It closed up overnight. Apparently a little bit of drama in the comic world as this is one of them old-fashioned skip-and-run type things where one day, I mean, we were there, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And it's nothing but an empty building now. And apparently he just posted, hey, I'm out of here. Store's closed. Goodbye. Which is weird because he just opened August 1st. August 1st to November 1st. That's got to be a new record. But the comics are gone. The toys are gone. I heard the guy's not even in town anymore. Some of the people left behind are fetching. You know, they owe money. They lost money, whatever. Local drama we're not involved on. But anything we mentioned in the past about Epic Comics, just go ahead and ignore it. Erase it. Take your MP3 and go into Audacity and just edit that segment out. Although, Corey and I did get some cool $1 comics when he was obviously pushing a liquidation thing. So,
Can we talk a little bit about why I think that store failed?
I think we could. I was hesitant to do so because I was like, you know, I don't like to speak well of the dead, but from what I understand, this guy closed out, liquidated, and skipped town and left people on money. So, whatever. Sky's the limit because he ain't even listening to us. What's up? We talked a little bit about this off the podcast, but let's put it on the record here. And so, if you're opening a comic store, sit back, grab yourself a tasty beverage, and listen to Corey's words of wisdom.
First off, you could not tell that this was a comic shop from the outside. It looked like an abandoned building. It was not, I mean, Joe, I don't know if you have pictures of it, but it looked like an abandoned building. There was no signage other than some stuff on the building itself. There was a couple of things in the window, but I think the big sign outside, you know, where they have the street sign, nothing on that. It was hard to get to. It was nowhere near any main thoroughfares or any main highways or freeways.
That particular intersection, though, is very heavily traveled. It's a busy thoroughfare.
Okay, because so, it did not look
again,
like it.
I didn't know about that until somebody pointed that out. Because, again, it's in an area of town I'm not familiar with. But if you're, you know, it's not probably the best location, but. You know, and again, that's just because you and I don't live in that section of town. So, but everything else has been spot on. So,
the next thing was he did not carry new comics or new anything really. When you went in, there was a lot of cool stuff, but it really felt like he was just selling his collection. And after we went there, all I could think was, I don't have any reason to go back. You know, he said, oh, I'm getting in a new back issue collection and everything. Well, that'd be cool maybe later on, but he's not getting new comics. He's not getting new trade paperbacks. There's nothing to have me go there a second time. If I go in during a sale and I spend the money and buy the stuff I want, why would I ever want to go back? The only publicity I saw was stuff he did on Facebook. Joe talked about how when he opened up, he had kind of a mini convention in his parking lot where he had some comic and toy dealers in the parking lot, and that probably got him some attention. But if I did not sign up for his Facebook page, or Joe would not have told me, I would not know this place existed. You have to do more than set up a Facebook page. Maybe get into local comic groups. He should have had a table at FallCon if he wanted to make a go of it.
He did try.
He should have planned a little better. All the little bitty cons he should have been at. He should have been at every little bitty con. He should have been at FallCon handing out flyers.
At least flyers. Actually, there were flyers at FallCon.
Okay.
And I did see him at some of the local toy shows, the ones that I was talking about, and he was passing them out there. So he did try.
Okay. So those are some good things, but he should have, when you said that you have a podcast, he should have jumped on that.
And I got to admit, I did get an interview with him. The only problem was I could never get it off my Sony recorder. And he did talk a lot about, and if I can ever salvage it, I'll put it on there. Getting an account with Diamond is a lot tougher now than it was when I took over. Because you have to have references, you have to give them a business plan, you have to, everything is COD cash on the barrel. So, and I think minimums are higher too. You know, for when we started, it was like, oh, you $500 a month wholesale? Yeah, we'll let you buy comics. So Diamond's either choking it off or they're just getting hurt themselves too badly. And just not allowing just anybody to jump in and say, yeah, we want a Diamond account.
Well, that's what it was like when Christy took over. She had no record with them, so everything was sent at COD, where UPS showed up. She had to have the money there. They would not take a regular check. They would only take a certified check or cash. And the other thing is, he only lasted a few months. If you start a business, and every business person who talks about starting a small business says the same thing, you will lose money for the first 2 years. If you make money that first year, you are an exception.
And to just, you know, again, a mini quick tales from the shop. Pat and I bought Hot Comics that we named Hot Comics St. Paul. So we bought an existing business, and we were making money right away, and we made more. Crazy Comics broke even, but I could never get it into the profit zone. And that's the point. It's fine to pay your bills, but if you're not making money at it, you're not going to survive.
And you need to be set up for the fact that you won't make money. I will use a wrestling analogy. There's that new company, All Elite Wrestling. They came out of the gate. They actually came out of the gate much better off than most new businesses. They had a TV deal within their first year. They have pay-per-view. They are backed by the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, you know, they've got money. I imagine that in order to start this up, they had to have a business plan, and the business plan would talk about how, you know, we're going to lose money for a while, but here is our plan for how we will eventually become profitable. But in your business plan, if your business plan is just, I'm going to sell comics because I love me some comics, you will fail. I use this joke all the time whenever anybody finds out how much I know about comics and how much, you know, I know about comics retail and the business end of things. They say, well, why don't you open a comic shop? I say, I have a better idea. I'm going to go to the bank and I'm going to borrow $10,000 in Susan B. Anthony coins. And I'm going to flush them down the toilet one at a time. And then when the toilet backs up, whatever's left, that's how much money I made. I will make more profit doing that than I would opening a comic shop in today's market. He was a nice guy. The store was fun. You know, he had a trivia question, and we actually discussed it for a while. He was a friendly guy. Once you got in the shop, it was really cool stuff. But nobody knew about it, and there was no reason for me to ever go back. You got to give people a reason to come in more than once. or you're just kind of an antique store, or you're a, you know, what they call, what are those, boutique, you're a boutique. And you've got to be able to get in enough people who come in once that you're going to make a profit. I doubt there are enough people in the Twin Cities that somebody who just sells back issues would ever be able to make it. Joe, what else are you freaking on?
That's pretty much it. How about you, Corey? What are you freaking on?
Well, I've been at the group home a lot. And it was a Halloween night. I had something kind of scary and gross happen.
Uh-oh.
One of the clients there is in his early 20s, and he's autistic. And autistic to the point where he doesn't speak. He has to basically wear Depends undergarments. Because he can't tell you when he's about to go to the bathroom. So I'm there working with someone, and it's time for this client to go to bed. So I take him into his bedroom and, you know, get his clothes off to get him ready for bed. And, oh, got to change the Depends. And when I take him off, he had gone number two and had been squirming in the chair so much that the number two went all the way up his back. Oh, crap. I got to clean him off. So I have him standing by his bed. I've got a bunch of wet wash rags and wet towels in order to wipe him down. And as I'm cleaning him up, he decides he wants to sit on the bed. No, please don't sit on the bed, because then I'd have to change all the bedding. Please stand up. Please stand up. So he doesn't just sit on the bed. He sits on the bed and then slowly, ever so slowly, slides off the bed onto the floor and lays down. So there is poo smeared from where he sat down to where he slowly dragged his behind off the bed and onto the floor. Oh, crap. Oh, it literally, oh, crap. So I'm trying to get, okay, I can still get him cleaned up, but he thinks this is the funniest thing in the world. So he's laughing and clapping and rolling about on the floor. The other staff, who I'm saying, can I get some help in here? No, the other staff was downstairs working on laundry. 20 minutes later, I have the bed changed. I have the floor mopped. I have the client all in his stuff. And I am breathing like I have run a marathon. Because, okay, I've got y'all dressed. Let's stand up. Oh, no, he's having too much fun laying on the floor, looking at me. And the thing is, as he's doing this, he's looking at me with this huge, beatific smile on his face. Just so happy to be there. So happy to get to ride his bed down to the floor. So that was my Halloween. Also, the missing box from Discount Comic Book Service still hasn't shown up yet.
So if you've seen Corey's missing box, please notify us. There's a reward. No, not pies or redheads.
What do I have? I have Altoids. I could give that as a reward.
I've got some keys to the Strode compound.
Oh.
It's very clean.
No, it's not. Because I haven't been home. I've been at the group home.
Sounds like a job for the cleaner.
Yeah, the cleaner hasn't had time to do anything this weekend. Some announcements from DC about what's going on. Joe, did you see the announcements for the new HBO Max?
I don't recall if I have.
HBO Max is Time Warner's new online streaming service. It's going to be
Price is what, $17 or something?
$15.99. They will have the second season of Doom Patrol, a Green Lantern series, and a Strange Adventure series based on DC Comics. So, oh, look, Joe, on a streaming service that's not the DC Universe, there are three DC Comics, three DC TV series, one of which had its first season on DC Universe. So, of course, the day after they make this announcement, they go, oh, don't worry, DC Universe is not going away for at least a year.
Now, that's an incentive sales pitch.
And the one series that I really loved, oh, guess what? It's going to be over on this other streaming service. No word on if it will be on the DC Universe service, since that's where the first series was. DC also announced that they're going to be adding almost 100 books to DC Universe this month. Marvel adds about 50 to 60 books a week to the Marvel Unlimited. DC has a whole ton of backstock that has not been put on DC Universe that I also know has been digitized and scanned because they've put out omnibuses of it.
Omnibuy?
I'm really not happy with DC's service right now.
And I am not incentivized to buy it.
I am not either. The last thing that I am freaking on is all the people who bellyache about the fact that there are going to be so many X-Men books. Look, I'm going to fill you in on something. Since 1991, there have been tons of X-Men books. You know why there are tons of X-Men books? Because they sold really well. And Marvel will continue to put out tons of X-Men books because they used to sell really well. And they will keep putting out tons of X-Men books until either they lose their shirt or they start to sell well again. Because Marvel does the same thing over and over and over. What was Marvel's business plan in the 40s? Oh, look, there's a trend. Let's put out a shit ton of books about it. What was their business plan in the 50s? Oh, look, there's a trend. Let's put out a ton of books about it. What was their business plan in the 60s? Shit, we can't put out a lot of books because we're being distributed by DC. Ah, now we have other distribution. Let's put out a shit ton of books. What was their business plan in the 70s? Let's put out a shit ton of books. Do you get the pattern, kids? It's what they've always done. It's what they'll always do. Complaining about it is like complaining about the fact that winter is cold, that water is wet, and that any movie that Adam Sandler makes is an embarrassment and an insult to your intelligence. Joe, what you geeking on?
We finished up Lucifer, which is on the Netflix.
Were there more butts?
Quite a few. That you got. Even if you watch nothing, you got to check out that. Like I said, that episode 5 in season 4 where they go to the nudist camp. If there were never to do a season 5, it ended awesomely. There is a season 5 coming. It's to be determined when. I know there'll 16 episodes released in 2 batches, but I want it now. Now. That's okay. We're going to watch The Good Place later. But how many seasons of that are there?
4. We're in the middle of the 4th season on TV.
Okay. So, and I know at least the 3rd has dropped on Netflix. So we're going to watch that. And there's all sorts of other stuff to watch. It's just a matter of time. It's almost too hard. You know, we should just do a podcast. What to watch on television? Other people are doing that. We'll stick with our national treasure, our little podcast that could. So if you didn't get a chance to, I recommend watching it. It was a lot of fun. My cousin Mary come back from Norway and brought me another foreign comic book. Another one I cannot read. It's, let's see, Helge. It's a moose. It's got to be the moose main character. And then there's looks like a hunter and a dog. Let's take a look in the page 2 here. That looks like kind of a strip. So maybe it's a reprint of web strips. I see a moose. I see hunting. I see,
Billy and Joe. Let me just read about it. Janie and Nina.
Sargha de Hursten Arti Mekid Guka Pangalung Ice Gukin. Barkatunka Faskin Eat Gunam Dak Uskalinga Sam Naki. Okay, I think I just offended our friends in Norway, so I'll quit. But I do love these comics. I've got a long box and a half of ones, and the fun thing about it is that it's from a person at the country and they brought it back. I just don't buy them off the interwebs nilly-willy. So that was kind of fun. I did mention, was it 2 podcasts ago, going to one of those, going to one of those toy swaps that they have in Minnesota every so often. The next one's actually coming up November 23rd. I'm not sure if I'll be able to catch it. But while I was there, I ran into...
you were bit by a rabid raccoon?
I wish. Her name was Purdy. Remember the graphic novel from Kickley?
Oh, yeah.
He was there signing, doing sketches, signing, and not a lot going on because this was kind of a toy thing. And I talked with him. I mentioned we talked about his book on the podcast. Have you read it, Corey?
I have not yet.
Okay. Well, I read it. I raved about it. I loved it. I actually gave him our card, so maybe we'll get a hold of him. I told him, he told me that volume 2 is done and ready to be published, but for some reason Image keeps pushing it off. He's not sure why, and of course it's a little disheartening because he only gets paid once the thing is published. Had something to do with Saga and last issue of Walking Dead or whatever. Maybe Image is looking forward saying, we're a little short this month, let's do it this month, whatever. So it's done, it's ready to go. In the meantime, if you haven't read Volume 1, go pick it up. It's a lot of fun. And I'll just read the little bleeve off the back. Purdy loves two things, sex and robbing banks, in no particular order. And I absolutely love the book. If I'd have known he was there, I would have brought mine to have him autograph it. But what did I know? I'm just a silly old podcaster. How about you, Corey? What you geeking on?
Barnes & Noble announced that they are having kind of their annual 50% off Criterion Blu-ray and DVD sale. It lasts from now until December 1st. And there was only one that I was looking for. Joe, I've talked in the past about the Godzilla set.
I know.
Where they are all of the Godzilla movies from 1954 until the mid-70s, when they stopped making Godzilla movies until they did Godzilla 1985. They have them in a set. They have all been remastered. There is a huge hardcover book. This is Criterion Collection number 1000. This is a huge box set. Their biggest it's not their biggest box set. They've had bigger box sets, but this is the biggest box set where I've went, I gotta have it. Now, when they had their last half price sale, they said, the Godzilla collection is not part of it. The Godzilla collection is part of it, and I was able to get it for half price. It's still $100.
I know, that's why I did. When I saw you guys, you talked about it. Our old buddy from Hot Comics and Lego artist Dan Wiesemeyer, he bought it and he's raving about it. I think he actually found it in the store.
Yeah, and it's in the store, but the nearest Barnes & Noble to me is so far out of my way. It's like by the time I get there, it would have been delivered in the mail.
And I was all excited. I went for it and I saw the price and I'm like,
well, not only that. The day after Barnes & Noble did their 50%, started their 50% off sale, Amazon cut the price too.
I'm shocked.
So I'm getting me the big old Godzilla box set.
Now, didn't you find a Godzilla box set like at Walmart or something?
Yes. That was mispriced? Yes, that was one that has from Godzilla 1985 to Godzilla Final Battle.
Ah.
Literally now, we'll have all the Godzilla movies made by Toho up until the latest Shin Godzilla.
Cool.
And the one thing is that I do have the five movie Godzilla set that was put out about a decade ago, which had the first five Godzilla movies, not by Criterion, but they're really nice. So they will probably be being sold for charity. So look for that in either Joe's eBay or at some convention near you.
Or we'll talk off camera and maybe I'll make a deal for you.
Oh, okay. And then the last thing I'm geeking on, first off, I wasn't initially geeking on it because it made me feel old. Joe, did you know that the Zero Hour is 25 years old?
It is.
Yes, the Zero Hour crossover that they did is 25 years old. They came out with the Zero Hour Omnibus. This was one of those big crossovers that DC did where everything tied into it.
So I should be getting that in my box.
Yep, and this is one where they tried to fix the errors that had occurred since Crisis on Infinite Earths. Spoiler alert, it didn't
stick. They failed.
But we did get some cool stuff out of it. They did streamline the Legion of Superheroes so that Legion and Legionnaires kind of did a reset.
It didn't last.
No, it lasted for at least a decade. We got Starman. Starman came out of Zero Hour. And all the other stuff that came out of Zero Hour didn't
work. Now, do they do the Superman where he's with Batman, and as the story progresses, Batman degrade, different Batmans show up from different areas?
Yes.
Oh, yes. They did that, and then there was the cover was beautiful because it had Superman, and around him are all the different Batman, including Dark Knight Batman and the original Batman where he posed in that really weird, like, here's my chest, and the cape behind him looks like a bat. And they did
that
Superman.
Stolen from who did it? Alex Raymond. That pose is directly stolen from Alex Raymond.
And then they did a Batman cover like that too, where it was Batman with surrounded by a bunch of Supermen.
Yes.
The story had nothing to do with that. It was just two cool covers. And again, they're probably, I don't know, I haven't priced them out, but they're probably in the quarter box somewhere. Pick them up for a buck somewhere. They're just fun covers. But that story is fantastic. What's up with your hair, old chum? Remember, this is Superman mullet years after he come back.
Superman.
And the Neil Adams Superman is looking at him. Ah, what's with your hair there, the hippie here, old chum, or however he says it. I'm looking, you know I'm going to crack this sucker open when I get it and read it, so.
Oh, it was so good. I just started reading it because I haven't been home that much since Box Day, but.
And as we know, and Corey was shocked, it's going to snow in a few days, so you got to move some of them omnibuses into your car to get your weight down so you can plow through them snowbanks.
That's the other thing. This was when I was really excited, you know, because Marvel was not very good at the time. But DC was really kicking on all cylinders at this point. I really enjoyed their stuff. I really liked the creators who were working. They were avoiding the whole, for the most part, they were avoiding the whole grim and gritty, scratchy art sort of style. So it's one of those where I'm reading it and going, oh, I love this era of DC. Kind of like when I read Infinite Crisis. And it was, man, I remember DC really had me hooked during this time. Maybe they'll do it again with the next Crisis. I don't know. And the last thing I'm geeking on, I now have the last of the Walmart exclusive books, Joe.
Well, good. Now you can stop going there, I guess.
Yes. Because Superman 16, Giant Superman Giant number 16, came out about 3 weeks ago. And I have gone to three different Walmarts and could not find it. They had all the other stuff, but they didn't have the Superman book. So instead, I went to the eBays. Now, in the past, for the Walmart books, people are putting them up on eBays for stupid money, like $20 for one issue. And I finally got to the point where it's okay. The cost of my time and driving, I'll pay $20 just to get it done. Just so I don't have to go, just, you know, because now all the rest of them are going to be available through Diamond. Fine. But nope, I found this one for $2 over cover price. And I got it 3 days later. And now I have them all. And the Superman story in Superman Giant number 16 is so damn good. Tom King's Superman story was fantastic. Just like Brian Michael Bendis's Batman story was fantastic. The new books, they aren't having continued stories as much, which is kind of a shame, but I do like the Dunham one. They've got like a main story and then one to two backup stories and then reprints. So I'm really enjoying that format. I love the 100-page format anyway. Loved it when I was a kid. I loved it when Marvel did the 100-page monster books. And I like the DC format. So while I don't have to ever go to Walmart again, thank I do have all of the Walmart exclusive books, and only one of them I had to pay extra for. Believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Thank you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we like better than the...
Start again.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
You know, if you boil a funny bone, it becomes a laughing stock. Come on, Corey, that's humorous.
I still don't get it.
Hit my music. Funk is on a roll.
We done, bitches!